This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, it seems like California is always ahead of the rest of the country, and now it's the case with healthcare reform implementation. We've been following the story since the summer when California legislature passed a bill that would set up a key part of health reform, the state-based health insurance exchange. Well, now it's official. Governor Schwarzenegger signed the legislation, making California the first state in the nation to set up the exchange. They'll be rolling out this exchange as early as next year. California is always seeming to lead the way.
Well, we have always said California would be particularly interesting to watch during this period of health reform because of its sheer size and the large number of uninsured residents. And of course, they're doing it in the context of a budget crisis like so many other states. But they're not the only ones making forward progress with that exchange, Mark. States are awaiting a response to their applications for funds of $1 million each to help support the development of the exchange in each of the states. And I understand that the federal government, very practically, has recognized that there may be a lot of changes in who's in the legislature and who's in the governor's mansion in states across the country this year after the election, and they're going to allow states to come back in with some modification, at least, to their original plans for how they want those exchanges to be structured.
You know, there's a fork in the road on how people roll out these exchanges. Some states are thinking about the e-insurance model, which simply provides information about health plans that can be purchased through the exchange. California is taking the robust approach. They'll be negotiating with vendors so they can get the best prices for the small businesses and individuals.
Well, the exchange is only one element of health reform, but it is an interesting one, and it's one that has a clock ticking. This has to be accomplished by 2014, so only a few years to go. And Mark, we know that Governor Schwarzenegger also cares about reversing childhood obesity, and in fact, he declared Recess Rocks Day in California recently, based on our own national obesity campaign here at the Community Health Center. So I wasn't really surprised to hear that he also recently signed a bill that requires school districts in California to offer free water during lunchtime. Apparently, a survey of California schools found that 40% of respondents did not offer students free water at lunch, which is astonishing to me. I wonder if that's the case for the rest of the country, too.
I hope it isn't. I think our guest today will be happy about the new law. U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Regina Benjamin joins us today. Dr. Benjamin is in charge of improving the health of our nation, and she comes to the position with firsthand knowledge of community-based health intervention, the need for quality health care for all, as well as the importance of prevention in health care. We're happy she can join us today.
And happy to have a family practice physician in that role.
We are.
And no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. Subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded, or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com, or become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with Dr. Benjamin, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with Headline News.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's Headline News. First Lady Michelle Obama and her Let's Move campaign have teamed up with Disney to get more children eating healthy and exercising.
Eating better and getting more active is easier than you think.
Yeah! And it makes you feel amazing. We call that magic.
The Magic of Healthy Living campaign will comprise of a series of public service announcements, which will run next year on Disney's TV channels and websites. Disney stars, alongside the First Lady, will promote healthy living in a fun way. The Let's Move initiative to fight childhood obesity has made it a point to include all sectors that impact children's health. This new collaboration with Disney will allow the campaign to reach a much larger audience. Healthcare.gov, the new government healthcare insurance website to help Americans find affordable insurance, has unveiled a bundle of new features. Consumers can now compare premiums and benefits for 6,200 plans offered by 300 insurers. With plan information being updated monthly, insurance shoppers can pretty accurately find premium estimates, maximum out-of-pocket costs, deductibles, and major types of covered services. There's even new data about how often applicants for a particular policy are denied coverage. A new study published in the journal Cancer finds that mammograms can cut the breast cancer death rate of women in their 40s by 26%. Researchers compared breast cancer deaths in women in Sweden. Since 1986, some counties in Sweden have offered mammograms to women in their 40s, and some have not. The study found that the rate of death was lower in counties with mammogram screening. These findings contradict last year's Preventative Task Force recommendation questioning the benefit of mammogram screening for women under 50. October is also Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Interested listeners can learn more about prevention tips at komen.org. This week on Conversations, we're speaking with Surgeon General Regina Benjamin. Dr. Benjamin, a former resident of Bayou La Batterie, a tiny Alabama fishing community, has been involved with recovery efforts in the Gulf Coast region, urging residents who've been affected by the oil spill to seek mental health counseling and medical help. A new Gallup poll makes the case that the BP oil spill has shaken the mental health of tens of thousands of Gulf Coast residents and that help is needed. A survey of almost 2,600 residents from Florida to Louisiana shows that depression cases are up more than 25% since the oil spill disaster began this spring. Dr. Joseph Basordi with Ochsner Health in New Orleans says 1 out of 10 people in the survey say their way of life is gone forever.
10% of the respondents said that their lives had changed completely because of the oil spill, and that number increased to 15% of those in the ages of 21 to 54, the younger patients.
A well-being index included in the Gallup survey says many coastal residents are stressed out, worried, and sad more often than people living inland. It's a sign that the spill's emotional toll lingers even as most of the oil has vanished from view. Basordi says the hopelessness and depression follow waves of hard times for the Gulf region, with Hurricane Katrina in 2008 and the current recession.
It's about money, jobs, it's about security, and it's about an anxiety and hopelessness that's affecting entire families.
The level of mental health problems was similar to what was seen 6 months after Hurricane Katrina battered the Gulf, and experts aren't seeing any improvements yet in mental health 5 months after the oil spill began. BP has provided $52 million for mental health care in the region, but health workers say more funding is needed from both BP and the federal government. Let's turn now to our interview with Dr. Benjamin, who can tell us more about her work in the Gulf Coast, as well as her role improving the health of every American.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today, we're speaking with Vice Admiral Regina M. Benjamin, MD and MBA, and the 18th Surgeon General of the United States Public Health Services. Welcome, Dr. Benjamin. Before being appointed Surgeon General by President Obama, you founded and directed a primary medical clinic in a small fishing village in Alabama, a diverse population of just over 2,000 with significant levels of poverty, and about 40% of the people who didn't have health insurance, the working poor. The New York Times article written about you, titled Angels in White Coat, described this isolated pocket of Alabama as desperate for doctors. First of all, thank you for your service to the underserved. Can you tell us what you learned about diverse populations living in poverty who lack insurance, and how do you see these health populations and health disparities being addressed in the new Affordable Care Act?
The patients are just like any place else. I mean, they're hardworking people who work for a living. They don't make enough to qualify for Medicaid, but they don't have enough to have insurance at this point. So the Affordable Care Act is aimed for people just like them who don't have access to health insurance. The idea is to make health insurance affordable for everyone, particularly the type of patients that I was seeing in Bayou La Batterie. Some of the things, for example, that went into effect just last week, the insurance reforms will help. Even, and let me back up a second. Some people had insurance, but had high deductibles and high copays. And so last week, insurance companies now, new insurance companies, are required to cover preventive services. And preventive services such as colonoscopies, mammograms, pap smears, flu shots, well child visits, those are now required by new insurances. And they also, the insurance companies cannot charge a copay or a deductible for that. So people, just like the patients I was seeing in BioLaboratory, will benefit from that tremendously and can save, you know, several hundred dollars just to get those preventive services and stay healthy.
Based on your experience as a family physician providing health care in a community and also as a National Health Service Corps alumna, I understand, I can't think of a better Surgeon General to lead the country's efforts to promote equality in health care and to promote prevention and health promotion in everything we do, as well as, of course, treating illness and managing chronic diseases. And certainly, as Surgeon General, you have an incredible base to put forth your priorities. Can you share with us those priorities? And we'd be particularly interested in any community-based interventions that you might have developed in your practice working in Alabama that you would like to see adopted on a national level.
Well, you know, prevention is the foundation of the public health system, and so prevention is the foundation of my work as Surgeon General. And so I've made prevention my priority, and so there are a number of things that come under prevention. As a family physician, I like everything, so I couldn't do everything, but I decided to do everything that comes under right. prevention. So things such as the obesity and overweight issues that we have in our society today, and we can talk about that at length, but that's one of the major ones. My first paper was the Surgeon General's Vision for a Healthy and Fit Nation. And in that, I'd like to change the conversation from a negative one about being fat and obese to a positive conversation about being healthy and being fit. And we need to just stop telling people what they can't do and they can't have this and they can't do that and start to tell them about what they can do to be healthy and be fit. So I want people to get back into having fun as they move and exercise and enjoy it. So that positive approach, I think, is really important when we talk about behavioral issues. So obesity is one. We've got HIV/AIDS is still a problem in our country, regardless of the fact that we have drugs to treat the disease, mm-hmm. we still have people dying from HIV/AIDS, and it's particularly growing amongst women and girls, and so that's an issue. Violence in our society is at public health levels, particularly with youth violence, violence in the workplace, domestic violence, just general violence in the general community, and it's adding to the stress level of our society. We also have issues of mental health. Violence is, of course, part of that, but behavioral health issues is just as much of a health problem as diabetes or hypertension.
You know, Dr. Benjamin, you've talked about a number of things that we'd like to delve into a little deeper on childhood obesity and behavioral health, but I want to ask a question about rural America. You know, they have so many challenges there, and one of them is to ensure access to primary care and specialty services. Recruiting and retaining primary care providers is a big one, and you've been a very strong proponent of mentoring young physicians. And as a family physician and someone who served rural communities, what's your thinking about how we can increase the number of young providers to choose primary care, and then how can we convince them to practice in rural communities?
Well, the first thing is exposure, and that was one of the things I did when I'd have students to just shadow me, spend time in those rural communities, and they get to feel, you know, whether they like it or not. It's not for everyone, but most people like it. They love the personal touch that and the personal feelings and interactions you get to have with your patients, and your patients start to treat you like family, and they're part of family, and you're part of their family, and students kind of get that experience. And whether they end up going to a rural community or into primary care or not, if they go into a specialty and they're, you know, happen to locate in a urban area, they know what those primary care physicians need from them when they send them a patient. And so they have that experience and that basic understanding of the needs of that rural doctor who sends them a consult or sends a patient to them, what they need when they go back. And that exposure in itself is a tremendous value. As far as getting people to the area, we just need to work on things that that help. We need to value the rural clinicians' services like we do anyone else's and try to compensate them appropriately. And same thing for primary care. If we value it enough, we should start to pay for some of those things. And in the Affordable Care Act, there is some workforce language there to try to help with getting our workforce up.
Dr. Measurement, I want to see if I can link a few of these things together. I've been impressed with your walking tours across the country, which seem like both a focus on prevention, but also on community engagement. And you have your blueprint for a healthy and fit nation. You know, the other night I found myself at a traffic light in a neighborhood that I think anybody would describe as not healthy, even though there are lots and lots of people on the street. And thinking about what you've said about violence and the tremendous stress families are under, poverty certainly adds to that. How do you put all that together? And if you're talking to community organizers and neighborhoods, what's your suggestion to them where they begin to build a healthier community?
Well, it is a community approach, and the individual individuals want to do well. You can tell they want to lose weight. They want to eat well and exercise. We know that by the amount of money we spend on diet products and weight loss products, but they need to have a healthy place to do it, a safe place to be able to do those things. And one of the things we say is we want to make the healthy choices, the easy choices, and the affordable choices. So encouraging the community and the businesses and all to work together to make walking paths. If we want people to walk, we need to have safe walking paths, good lighted areas. We want the parks not to be drug paraphernalia and things. We want them to be safe. So that's a role for government, for communities to do, to be able to make these areas safe. And in addition to those, we have things like the food deserts, where there are no good grocery stores in certain areas, in geographic areas. We need to try to give incentives for these grocery stores to come into these communities. And if they can't get the grocery stores there, which we really need to work on, in the meantime, we can try to put some refrigerated units in the convenience stores, because oftentimes that's all you have in convenience stores. Put some refrigerated units there with some healthy options and some fresh fruits and some vegetables in those refrigerated units.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with the United States Surgeon General, Dr. Regina Benjamin. You've been involved in the recovery efforts on the Gulf region, and you mentioned the impact that this spill has had on people's mental health, and you've been an advocate for people to reach out and get the services they need. You've also experienced the similar problem when Hurricane Katrina came through. It destroyed your clinic, and then it was rebuilt. I want to sort of get at the issue of our preparedness as a country for these disasters, natural and man-made. Are we better off now? Are we better prepared? And what other things can we be doing to respond to these emergencies?
You know, since 9/11, since the Hurricane Katrina, particularly government has put a number of things in places. And so I'd say, yes, we're so much further advanced. Can we do more? Of course, we can always do more. We always need to practice. We need to be prepared. One of the things that I particularly learned from my two hurricanes and a fire that destroyed the clinic was that electronic health record really, really helps in a small practice or in any practice particularly, that we need to protect the patient information just like we do our financial information, and having it on electronic version of it really helps. And so with the program here at HHS that we've put through with meaningful use and trying to encourage clinicians, hospitals, doctors' groups, and doctors' offices to move toward electronic health record really will improve the quality of care that we provide, as well as protect this information and have us prepared. So you can go to sleep at night. You don't have to worry about whether the charts get wet in a flood or if they burn, because they're backed up, saved in different geographic areas. So that's one of the things that we're starting to move toward, but we can do better. And there's financial incentives for for doctors to do this in hospitals. The government, HHS, has grants available for that.
That's very exciting. And Dr. Benjamin, we congratulate you a little late, but you're the recipient of a 2008 MacArthur Genius Award. Mm-hmm. And that's really a tremendous honor. And we read that you debated between putting the $500,000 prize into an endowment for your health clinic or into scholarships for local students to study math and science. And it seems to me, as states face these huge budget problems, it's increasingly a choice between funding healthcare or funding education, and a very critical policy issue. How do you respond to this as Surgeon General, but also as an advocate for education for economically disadvantaged youth?
Well, I think everything starts with education, and you have a strong basic education, all kinds of doors open, all kinds of opportunities. We improve our health care when we understand our health care, and we really need to make sure our K through 12 education system is as solid as it can be. And there's a lot of conversation going on around that now, and I think people are understanding it and understanding how it really affects your community. An educated community can be a healthy community, because we often, it's much easier to get it, if you have a good job when you're educated, you have a better income, you can afford your health care. I mean, there are things that just, they link to each other. Regarding the MacArthur funds, I actually decided to split them. And then when I accepted this position as Surgeon General, the funds had to be cut off because you can't accept them. And so they're sort of, I guess, on hold until...
until you return to private life.
Or 10 years, never.
Dr. Benjamin, we always like to ask our guests that when they look around the country and the world, what do they see in terms of innovations, and who should our listeners at Conversations on Healthcare be keeping an eye on?
You know, I go out and talk to groups and people around the country, and the least person that you would think of may have a great innovative idea. Mm-hmm. And so my thought is that to try to encourage people to think about things that their little idea that they may think is nothing may be very, very big. And it usually just starts with just a conversation and just somebody sitting down thinking about it. It doesn't have to be someone with a lot of degrees, a lot of awards. Just the average, everyday person can solve a problem. And that's what innovation is, to make a problem either go away or make it easier to do what we do every day. And so my thing is just the average person, the average Joe is probably our biggest pool of innovators that we'll have.
That's very well said. Today we've been speaking with U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Regina Benjamin. Dr. Benjamin, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations.
Thank you. I would like to just remind everybody that this is flu season and to remember to get their flu shots.
Thank you. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea focuses on the winners of the Apps for Healthy Kids competition, a USDA-sponsored contest for software tools and games to motivate children to eat a more nutritious diet and engage in more physical activity. Healthy Kids Competition is part of First Lady Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign, which aims to eradicate childhood obesity within a generation. This first place prize went to ZisBoomBa.com. Their application, titled Pick Chow, allows children to create meals by placing foods onto their virtual plates. PicChow also involves the whole family in crafting a healthy diet by allowing children to send their meals to their parents in an email, which includes the meal recipe, a shopping list, and coupons from the local grocery store. Apps for Healthy Kids awarded the first place game prize to Trainer, an online game in which children play the role of an animal trainer who must attend to creatures' nutritious and fitness needs. By working to meet both in-game and real-life fitness and diet goals, children care for their own health the same way they care for their virtual animals. The Apps for Healthy Kids competition has encouraged creative innovation in youth health education at a time when such developments are sorely needed.
One-third of American children are overweight or obese today. The Apps for Healthy Kids winners are working to reverse that trend by making important diet and exercise information available to children in fun and interactive ways. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.